Good afternoon, everyone. It's really nice to be invited to talk to you here today about Valid IT. So I'd like to say to all the students in the audience, well done for staying awake. I'm aware you've been up since 4 o'clock this morning. So quite surprising, really, after lunchtime in a room this hot, you're still awake. So well done. To start off with, really, we've had a number of speakers here today talking about food fraud. But what are the industry actually doing to try and help these issues we have with food fraud? So that's really where Valid IT comes in to play in certain ways for certain retailers. You know, the Valid IT scheme is there to try to help prevent certain issues in relation to food fraud, food contamination. So really what I want to talk to you about is what the Valid IT scheme is, what it does, and how it does try to prevent certain issues from happening within the industry. One of the speakers mentioned earlier on today about the issues and the difficulty in tackling food fraud, and I probably agree with them in terms of within the UK and the EU how difficult it is to actually do that. Do we have the right resources in place? You know, lack of enforcement. FSA has been heavily criticised quite recently. You know, are we actually doing enough within the UK and Europe to actually tackle it? When I was looking up to get some useful quotes and things like that for the session today, I actually found something which was published on the internet. So this is quoted. The FBI and the World Customs Institute stated last year that food fraud is the crime of the century, and it's costing the industry tens of billions of pounds. The perpetrators, just in the US, from an annual point of view, they're actually getting tens of billions of dollars because of food fraud. That's just in the US, so you can imagine how much they're getting from the rest of the world. So I think we in the UK and the EU probably need to do more to be trying to tackle it. Focusing back on Valid IT, as you'll see, the scheme operates in very narrow circumstances for certain particular high-risk ingredients for certain retailers. So, you know, as I said, what I want to really focus on is looking at the Valid IT scheme. I touched very briefly on who Exova are. Some of you may well have heard of us, probably the majority of you haven't. So it's worthwhile just to really go into that in a bit of detail. We'll then go into what Valid IT is, why did it come about, look at what's covered within the scheme, look at the approach we use for assessing the people that want to be approved under the scheme, and then focus on why is it still relevant? It's been around for a number of years. Is it still relevant? And then also then look at what will happen in the future. Very briefly, I won't go into too much detail, I'm not a salesman. Exova is a very large international company operating in various different sectors. So a range of oil and gas, aerospace, automotive. The Valid IT scheme fits within the health sciences division. And as you'll see, in terms of the health sciences, it may well be something that some of you within the audience won't have heard of Exova, but probably would have heard of Law Labs. And Law Labs, in essence, is Exova Health Sciences now. Personally, I started with Law Lab back in 98. So I've been working within this type of consultancy for a number of years. I left around 2006, just after it was sold to Bodycote. I worked with a couple of other consultancies, and in particular worked with an auditing consultancy. So I was conducting non-GM certification audits across the UK and EU. I subsequently have been back to Exova since about 2011. So one of my main tasks is looking after the Valid IT certification scheme. So in terms of just very, very quickly, health sciences, these are the types of things we get involved with. So we've got a large auditing team doing BRC audits, IFS, Red Tractor, Halal, beef labelling, that type of thing. a number of consultants that work with retailers, manufacturers, dealing with technical labelling, that type of thing. And then obviously we've got lots of different laboratories up and down the country conducting analysis, nutrition, micro, pesticides. And we have a very large training programme that complements all of those particular facets. So I'm not going to go into too much detail. It's my selling bit done. So for my sales colleagues in the audience, we go, we're done. So why did Valid IT start? Basically because of these types of headlines. As you see, the Daily Mail, certainly there. Terms like Frankenstein food. Specifically, it was this media storm, really, that led to certain retailers in the UK thinking, well, actually, our consumers, people that want to buy our own branded products, they don't really want to have products that contain genetically modified ingredients. So as a result of that, they implemented certain technical policies that said, if you want to supply a product with our name on it, you cannot have any genetically modified ingredients in it. So we worked with them, we set up a protocol, we set up a system, and the Valid IT scheme was born. A couple of years later, we had this issue, the adulteration of certain spices with illegal dyes. So again, most or some of you within the audience that worked at junior school at the time probably remember this. Massive, massive issue for the industry. Cost between £100 and £200 million. Within the space of 2 to 3 weeks, nearly 1,400 items in the media surrounding this. So it was huge from an industry point of view. So as a result of this, then within the Valid IT scheme, as well as the non-GM issue, we then added on controlling certain spices. Again, so for retailer, own branded products, if you wanted to supply them a product with particular spices in, that had to go through the Valid IT scheme. So you can see what retailers are doing. They're trying their best to try to prevent issues of food fraud, protecting their own brand, and looking at things from a due diligence point of view. So, currently we operate the scheme on behalf of Tesco's, Waitrose and Sainsbury's, and we have had some interest from other retailers and Last Cash and Carry recently, so we're investigating that. So, they're the retailers we operate the scheme on behalf of. So as I say, if anyone wants to supply those particular retailers with any of the at-risk ingredients, then it has to come through, but we have to make sure the ingredients that we're using are approved. So it's relatively straightforward in terms of, it's a desktop exercise. We send out questionnaires to the suppliers, get them to complete the questionnaires, and then using the experience we have in the team, we make sure that there's sufficient information from a due diligence point of view that there isn't going to be any risk for that particular retailer. So we look at things very much on a risk-assessed basis, and you'll see what I mean by that shortly. And then crucially, on an annual basis, we look at every single application again. So we have an annual renewal process. So we contact each of the applicants. Again, they have to complete a detailed questionnaire. We look at it and make sure that nothing significant's changed, and to make sure that the integrity of the system is still maintained. So there's a lot that goes into actually becoming an approved supplier under Valid IT. It's an internet enabled database, which is where the IT bit comes from, I assume. And it contains a searchable list of suppliers and ingredients which we then control. Obviously, all of the retailers have access to the system as well. So going into a bit of detail as to, we've mentioned at-risk ingredients. What are those particular at-risk ingredients? So two sides, non-GM and spices. From a non-GM point of view, we're focusing on soya, the maize and the derivatives. And you'll see what I mean by that, because there's quite a long list. And we're also controlling any non-EU rapes and oil as well. Currently we've got 179 approved suppliers who then supply in 525 ingredients. That tends to increase over the years, so that is something which does increase. So in terms of when we say soy or maize and the derivatives, it's exactly what we mean. So you can see there's quite a lot of different ingredients. So it ranges from your typical ones of soy flour, soy oil, soy lecithin would be quite a common one. From a maize point of view, you've got all your maize starches, dextrose and fructose from maize. And we also cover certain compounds that are derived from soy and maize as well. So things like aspartate, maltodextrins, MSG, xanthan gum. And the very far right-hand column details the ingredients that aren't controlled. So it's alternatives that wouldn't be derived from soy and maize sources. So quite a long list of different types of ingredients. I mentioned before it's a desktop exercise, so you know we're not going out and seeing all the suppliers. So we're very much reliant on getting information from them and assessing that using the experience that we've got. So in particular from my point of view, I've actually been out on site conducting non-GM certification audits. I know what we should be looking for. So things that we'll bear in mind when we get applications through in relation to non-GM. We'd look at things like where the territory of the ingredients being grown. Are they legally allowed to grow GM material? It may well be in their particular country, they're not allowed to grow GM material. So from our point of view, we know the risk isn't going to be there, it's potentially going to be later on down the supply chain. If they are allowed to grow GM material in that particular country, and obviously we've looked very carefully at the whole of the supply chain from seed all the way through to retail. We look at, again, where that particular ingredient is being grown, EU, non-EU, focusing on certain high-risk countries, so America, Canada, Brazil, China. Those particular countries do grow a lot of GM material. So if the supplier is getting the material from those countries, again we know we need to spend and focus a lot more on that particular supplier. Ideally what we want them to be getting from the applicants is independent third party IFE certification, something like a CERT ID standard or an SGS standard, because we know the particular issue surrounding GM, if they've got that, then it's being looked at by someone on site. So our confidence then is much higher. We'll also look at other things, at other accreditations. So what other accreditations does the supplier have? So if it has BRC, IFS, ISO, then again, it gives us confidence that they've got the policies and procedures in place. Other things we'd look at from a risk assessment point of view is, do they have GM and non-GM on the same site? If they do, then obviously we've got to be looking at segregation. How are things segregated? And obviously, we'd be getting test results and looking at traceability. So if there was an issue, can they trace it back correctly? So that's the type of thing we would look at from a risk assessment point of view. And the other thing we look at really is the whole of the supply chain. So we're not just looking at a small part, we really do look at the whole thing. So looking at the seed, for example, are they using certified non-GM seeds? Look at the harvesting, the storage. So segregation's key. The transportation. Cleaning records. Risk of cross-contamination. And then getting testing certificates. So it is quite a detailed program that we would look at. Other things to bear in mind, and this has already been mentioned today, other things that are going to be added to the valid IT scheme, rice. Big issues over the last few years. 2008 we had the GM rice coming over from China, the BT63. And as you'll see a bit later on, that's probably one of the highest risks, I think, from a GM point of view. Changes in legislation over the last few years, I think, have led to a higher risk of GM rice coming back into the EU. And consequently, rice being used in milk and in other types of products. And basmati rice has already been mentioned today. It's a big issue, a big potential issue, I think, with the adulteration going forward of basmati rice, because there's a shortage this year of basmati rice. So it's, you know, one of those ingredients which could easily be adulterated. So as a result of that, it's a high risk ingredient and it's going to be added to the validity scheme. From a spices point of view, as a result of the illegal diet issue, the controlled ingredients we have, so there's certain capsicums, so paprika, chilli, cayenne, we then have turmeric, and then also compound ingredients which include those. The following are excluded. We get a lot of questions from people saying, well, is this part of the scheme? Do I have to go through validity or don't I? So that's why I put this particular slide on, really. Extracts of those spices, so colours and oleo resins, are not part of the scheme. Dried or dried and chopped spices, where the product doesn't contain any powdered elements, isn't part of the scheme, and also fresh spices. Now, the powdered element is the key, really. In terms of looking at spices from a risk point of view, if someone is going to add an illegal dye to spices, it's going to be at the milling or the grinding stage. So the powdered element is key. So from a spices point of view under the scheme at the moment, there's 110 suppliers supplying 368 approved ingredients. From a risk assessment point of view with spices, part of it's the same. We'll probably look at different aspects than non-GM. We'll still look at the certification of the site. Obviously, we want to be confident that that's particular site has decent certification, policies, procedures, that type of thing in place. We'll get a copy of traceability, and as you'd expect for this type of issue, testing is going to be key, so we get copies of test certificates, and then on an annual basis we're getting more test certificates. And as I've already mentioned, these aspects of milling and grinding is one of the biggest. So any valid IT supplier, if they're supplying spices, it either has to come from an approved source, in terms of the miller or grinder has to be approved, or they have to go through the procedure themselves. So I mentioned before about legislative changes. There's been a couple of aspects. One we'll talk about a bit later on in terms of rice. One that's actually affected spices quite recently. When the AZO, when the illegal dye issue hit the industry, the EU were quite strong in terms of coming out with this particular decision there that meant anything coming into the EU which could contain illegal dyes had to be accompanied by analytical certificates to prove that it didn't contain those dyes. But over the last few years, that particular legislation has gone, it's been revoked, been replaced by this particular regulation here. And the key aspect here is that particular regulation doesn't specify that all batches have to be accompanied by analytical certificates. All it says is 20% of those particular products will be tested at port. So the way I see that is there's going to be potential for adulterated spices to come into the EU. So why is it still relevant today? I think it's still very relevant, this aspect in terms of GM. is still in the media. The media still portrays it as the same it was when it first came out 10 years ago. So we still have headlines like these. These are all being taken from publications over the last few months. We've still got this term of Frankenstein food. We have things like GM super pigs and the new threat to our food. We still get headlines like that. Worse, you get things like this, linking GM maize to cancer. So it's still very, very much one of those issues which you get headlines like this, retailers will still say, well, I don't want it in our product now. I quite agree in terms of, you know, the amount of food the world produces isn't going to be sufficient, so at some point we need to address this. But when we're getting headlines like that, I think retailers within the UK will say, well, we still do not want to have GM in our products. Other thing to bear in mind is it still relevant? Well, yes, it is. If you look at the Rapid Alert System for Food and Feed, the EU operate this particular scheme, and any particular food product which is stopped reporting as an issue with it is reported onto this particular website. You can go in and you can search for different categories. So it may well be to do with additives, it might be to do with foreign bodies, anything like that. There'll be lists and you can see the numbers of products that have been issues with. So going in to this particular website over the last 18, 20 months, in terms of numbers of products that contain unauthorised GMOs that have entered the EU, there have been over 100. And that's only the ones that they've found. So we mentioned this rice is the biggest issue in rice products. Surprisingly, papaya coming from Thailand is a big issue being genetically modified. We then had a few in terms of maize. So my question is, well, what's slipping through them? What's coming into the UK that is genetically modified and we don't know about? From a spices point of view, illegal dyes, less number, but again, it's still worrying, I think, that within that same period, there were 10 products found with unauthorised dyes in them. So that would say to me, well, the practice is still going on. Again, how many are slipping through the net? So in terms of Valid IT and its future, I still do think GM is still going to be important for the Valid IT scheme. Issue of dyes, as you can see, it is still an issue, so it will still continue. Rice and rice products from China and basmati rice, I think, will have to go on. That's probably more of an issue going forward. Papaya, question mark, I don't know. That will be something, I think, we'll discuss with the retailers. Just to finish off in terms of other aspects in terms of Valid IT and the future of it, we're looking to update it, make sure it stays with the technology that exists at the moment. So we're looking at smartphone app, make things easier for the suppliers. We're looking at a fully interactive website, so questionnaires are actually completed on the website. New retailers, we're getting certificates, so if you are approved under the Valid IT scheme, you have a certificate which you can then attach to the relevant retailer specification. And the other thing we're looking at is this aspect of testing. I think it was Nick or another speaker mentioned earlier on about the amount of extra testing that retailers are doing now because of the horsemeat issue that happened earlier on in the year. So we're working with the retailers to fit within their surveillance testing program. At the moment, retailers are testing their own brand products for non-GM spices. We're going to fit that within to the Valid IT scheme. So we're actually doing that for the retailers. So just to conclude, really, in terms of Valid IT, you know, it is very much still relevant. for the industry. It's going to be changed, updated. Experienced team operate that particular scheme for those retailers. And I do think, in terms of, you know, the one of the main subjects that people are talking about today, this aspect of fraud and adulteration, you know, the retailers that are actually part of the scheme, they use valid IT for their own due diligence. So I do think it is very much still relevant. And I think there's going to be more ingredients added, more retailers actually operating under the scheme. Okay, so thank you for your time, and I look forward to any questions we have later on.